second time. For Bird Note, I'm Ade Ben Salahuddin.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Why eat snack seal?
Tan she.
Tanek e. Negar dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Why cast kolchalt? Isquist sumachat kentil sin pington. My name is Tracy Kimbono. I am a storyteller, filmmaker, and grandmother. I'm so excited to introduce you to my Silk culture and our Silkton language. I am honored to be situated on the unceded territory of our Silk people in St. Pinkton, Penticton, where we have cared for and protected our lands for over 10,000 years. Also known as Penticton, we are in the breathtaking Okanagan Valley of British Columbia. It is at the south end of the valley, tucked between Kelowna and Osoyoos. The place name St. Pinkton refers to a gathering place that our people like to gather when traveling through the Silk territory. Growing up on the Penticton Indian Reserve, the largest reserve in British Columbia, I was surrounded by the rich sounds of my grandparents and family speaking the language. Yet, I stand as the first generation in my family not fluent in Insilchin. I am determined to reconnect and revive our beautiful language. I never became fluent in the language because my dad was not fluent, and my mom, who is fluent, only spoke English with each other. Because of that, I didn't get to hear the language in real conversations, which held me back from learning it completely. Elder Rose Caldwell is a Silk elder from the West Bank First Nation in West Kelowna, British Columbia. She's a first-generation survivor of residential school, which means she didn't go herself, but her parents did, and she grew up knowing about their experiences. This episode dives into what it's like for first-generation survivors and the effects of residential schools, focusing on their strength and determination to move forward. I asked Elder Rose how we should begin, and she suggested an Okanagan blessing so she can call on the ancestors and begin in a good way.
Kulinchutin, ku biuhti huil, me wikinich hoi, ku gultis puus apanatus kalhalt, me hastich hoi, ku huchil ich bachbacht. Me lut exichin lebt, co huches each gutch quatched, mini aipkin tkittimist, itil yayat itil gust, hust each hail. And the English translation is Creator, light up the road so I can see my way. Fix my mind now today so where I go may be good. Give me wisdom so that I don't forget. Give me strength so I can defend myself from all bad things. It's good that it's this way.
So where did this prayer come from, and how did you come by offering this prayer and starting with this prayer?
This prayer came from a group of elders many years ago when they first talked about starting the band schools on each reserve, so that our kids could start learning the language again. The metaphor meanings behind it is that you're calling your elders and your speakers in with you to help you make good decisions and to be able to listen really well and to be able to protect yourself against the negative environments around you. My informal introduction is Why Haskell Halt? Isn't Gelsquist Gelkampitsa, Isama squeezed Rose Caldwell. Ken tell Scott Luniot kicken gul, Nahum Gelson Pinkton kicken gulum ulken mut. My name is Rose Caldwell. I was born out of the West Bank First Nation, but I live and work here in Penticton. I am from the Silk Nation. I come from West Bank, which is about midway of the Okanagan Lake. We have seven bands on the northern side of the border. Okay, so the territory comprises of seven bands, Vernon, West Bank, Penticton, Upper and Lower Smilkameen, Spachman, which is in Merritt, and Osuyus. That's on the northern part of the border. And then we have reserves that are Okanagan connected on the American side of the border. So we cross the border. The language that we speak is in Siouxchen, and it's the language of our area up here in the northern part of the territory.
So we're going to talk about your journey as a, you know, first generation residential school survivor. So I want to take you back to your journey, and for those that don't know what first generation residential school survivors are you comfortable in sharing with me what that is, and the journey that your parents were on and how it impacted you in terms of some of the decisions that you made later on to make sure that you regained your language and culture?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with doing that. In my family, I come from a family of eight. There's eight siblings. And my mom went to residential school. My dad never, but my mom did. In our sibling line, five of my siblings, the one next to me, to the oldest, are fluent in the language. Residential school came, and then the three of us, myself and my two younger brothers, weren't taught the language. And it was, for me, it was really difficult because I grew up thinking, so what the heck was wrong with me? How come I wasn't good enough to teach? And that was a chip on my shoulder for many years. And then I came to the conclusion that the only way that I'm going to learn is by taking courses. And I've pretty much been in a classroom situation with every fluent speaker in the nation. And I've been learning my language for probably 30 plus years now. One of the things my mom used to always tell me is, in order to know where you're going, you need to know where it came from. So, and that's reconnecting back to the language and back to the land. And that we do through our courses. In the later years of the bachelor's course, we do on the land learning, where we actually go out to our sacred sites and we bring mentors with us who know the area or know the story of the area, because all of our legend stories, some of us call it legend stories, we call it chaptik, they're written on our land. And it's really important to go and visit those places because it gives you a reconnecting to yourself, to the land.
Can you share with me a particular moment that you were out on the land, either as a student or as a teacher, that a memory, something that you're, like an aha moment that you may have had?
I've had so many. One of the ones that really changed me, because my journey started out, I just wanted to learn how to speak it and to understand what was being said. Language in our household when I was a really young person was used for secrets. And so I wanted to know what was being said. One of our chaptik stories surrounds our, kind of like, I guess, like our creation story, which is the four food story. And then another really important story is how names were given. In one of our classes in our second year, we studied a lot of our stories. And in class, we'd study them, analyze them, look them over, understand what the language words were for different things. And then towards the end of the class, we took a trip, a road trip, and we went and visited the places of the stories that we studied. When we got there and got out of the vehicles that we were all, because we all caravaned, it had just finished raining, and you could smell the smell of the pavement. And now, whenever I talk about that time, I can smell it. I have that smell that comes to me, and it really made me understand and know that our stories are written on the land. We need to go visit those places. Another time, we were at the Ochre Bluffs, and that's where our Indian paint comes from. And we were there with our mentors. We had two mentors there, and they talked about the area and gave us a history about the area. And when we left from there, we were walking. There's probably about 25 students and our mentors and our cooks, because we ate out on the land as well, and we were walking. We had to walk probably about a kilometer to get back to our vehicles. And we could hear singing, like a drum, somebody drumming and singing. And nobody that was with us had a drum. And I looked at my partner that was beside me, and I said, "Did you hear that?" And she says, she looked at me and she said, "You hear it too?" And I said, "Yeah." So we started, amongst us, started talking, and one of our elders at that time, our mentors that was there, he told us that our sacred areas are lonesome for us. So they were showing us that they appreciated us being there. And now that we know about the place, then it's our responsibility to bring our children and our grandchildren there to visit. And that was a really emotional thing for me, that, you know, no longer was it just something written on a book or a story told, and we actually seen it and felt it and heard it.
And so after the elder explained, or the mentor explained, was there a sense of relief?
Well, we ended up singing a song back to them.
Oh.
And it was just amazing. It was an amazing feeling for your heart to be connected to your spirit, to your voice, to the ground. Like, that whole connection was just amazing.
So tell me about the land as a language teacher, because I know that you are on the land a lot with everything that you do in terms of the work that you do in the nation, not just as a teacher, but that connection and the continuing on with. I would like to know more about that connection and the importance of it for everyone.
Well, there was another time where in our, I believe it was our fourth year of our degree, where we were at the UBC campus and we were doing a walk about identifying plants and different things, and it started to rain, like not really rain, but drizzle. We were getting wet, so we went to this little shelter area and we stood there, our instructors, and they're all Sealh instructors, they're all nation people, she asked us how we felt about what was going on. Like, what were those words that we were learning? How did that connect and how did we feel? And I told her that even though it was raining, I had a really strong feeling in me to sit on the ground
And she said that was just amazing because it was the ground that was talking to us. It was the ground that was, and another student said that it, for her, even though she didn't practice being in the rain, but for her, her feeling was she wanted to go walk out in the rain. Didn't matter if it was raining. She wanted to be out there touching the wet grass and the wet dirt. And so it draws the teaching, the words, the meanings of the words. It all draws you back to your feeling of completeness, I guess is the best way I can explain it.
I always feel a deep sense of humility when I sit down with Elder Rose Caldwell. Her stories about her journey as a language teacher and learner resonate with me on so many levels. Our Sealk Nation is truly fortunate to have elders like Rose, who have opened their hearts to the importance of language. They understand that it serves as a vital pathway to healing and revitalizing our communities. And their wisdom inspires all of us to embrace this journey together. Earlier, she mentioned she felt like she was not good enough for her mother to teach her how to speak Sealk. And I wanted to know why.
Yeah, because my mom was a very fluent speaker, and she was a teacher as well, but I was never in one of her classes because I was too young. Back then, there was no classes for kids and stuff. It was all mostly just young adults to adults, and I was really angry for a long time. And when I decided to go to school, when I decided to take classes, my brother right next to me, his name is Wilford Grouse, he's a teacher today as well, he came with me for 2 years. He came to all of my classes, sat beside me, and for me it wasn't about memorization or anything like that. For me it was about, what's the picture? So we'd be sitting in a class and they'd be talking about words and meanings and all that kind of stuff. And I'd always tell them, what's the picture? What's the picture? And so he helped me. And that really, I guess, resolved a lot of my anger, because no longer was it used for secrets. It was talked about openly. It was, he was willing to sit with me and help me learn. I remember one time we were here at Anaukin, and my grandfather, he passed away when I was 3. And I don't remember him. And there was a word, and I couldn't tell you today what that word was, but there was a word that was spoken in our lesson that gave me a flashback of him. And a little old man with a long white beard, and he was leaning over the bed, the end of the bed, and there was a little, tiny little person sitting on a potty, and he said that word to me. And when I realized that that was my grandpa, and I got that flashback because of a memory that I had of him, I cried the whole day. I went into the open area and sat on a chair. My brother came and sat beside me, and he had no expectations. He wasn't coddling me or nothing. He just let me feel what I had to feel. And some of the instructors would go by and say, what's wrong with her? Is she okay? Is she going to be okay? And he would just tell her, these are happy tears. She got it. She got it. She got what she was looking for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really emotional for me. And it even makes me emotional now because it reconnected me to the deepest part of my being, and reconnected me. And that's what I needed.
So it was a really important milestone and turning point for you.
Very much so. And back then, when I first started language learning, I was an executive. I worked in the office. I was an executive to the chief, an executive secretary, and this and that. And I worked in accounting, and I had absolutely no yearning to become a teacher. And at that point, if somebody would have said, "You're going to be a teacher one day," I would have laughed and said, "No way." Now, today, I can't see myself doing anything else.
So as we're wrapping up our interview, I can't help but really feel that you are somebody that is really happy with how things turned out, that you live your language journey and your journey, you know, living seal really completes you.
It does. It really does. And anybody in the nation, wherever I am, whatever dinner I'm at, or I make a point of participating in all community events, not only here in Penticton, but in Vernon and Merritt and the Smiltameen and Oliver. All over. I go, my sister and I, we go all over, and anytime anybody wants to speak language, I'll drop everything to do that. I've had people ask me, "How do you say this?" or "I heard this, what does it mean?" And we deal with it in the moment. And I think that's a real key, is dealing with things in the moment. Because if you wait till class is done, 99.9% of the time you're going to forget what you wanted to ask. Or you're not going to be able to ask it in your thoughts. In the moment. So being in the moment is really important, being present in the moment.
Circling back to what we talked about in the beginning was the first generation residential school survivor and your message about that and residential schools in general, and you know that you didn't have to attend residential school to be impacted. Mm-hmm. Any final message, words on that?
Well, it's interesting how different people in different families, when we talk about residential school, you know, you think that you're the only one that's going through something. But if you get into conversation with other people, you come to realize that a lot of people live through the same thing. So if we can get past the, you're good enough to teach, but we were trying to protect you because we got beat up when we were taught. That message needs to be brought back to a lot of people because they are good enough to teach. You are good enough to teach. Whatever language it is that you come from whatever community you come from, seek it out. And doing it in a good way, in a positive, healthy way, the ancestors of your communities will help you.
Mm. You have this song that you would like to sing and share with us.
So one of the, I learned how to do this Okanagan blessing by speaking it, but I also learned how to sing it. So this is how it goes.
And is this your composition?
No, it's not mine. I learned it from an elder in the Smiltameen.
Beautiful.
Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. Oh, colon choten. Go Ichuil, me waken each hoy. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. Oh, colon choten. Go cold is Apnatis halt, mi chastik choy,
Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. Oh, Colin Jotin, Kuhwich, Ixbach, Bacht, Melod, Ixichin, Lipt. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. Oh, Colin Chotin, Kuhwich, Lich, Kuch, Quach, Mini, Ipe, Kentachit, the Mist, Itl, Yayat, Itl, Kast. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hi, oh, hey, oh, hey. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. Chastich heil.
Elder Rose Caldwell grew up as a first-generation survivor of residential schools, which left her with a limited understanding of her Sikh culture and language. Even though the government of Canada tried to erase our culture and language, it's really inspiring to see people like Rose, who works hard to bring back the Tsimshian language. When we chatted, she shared how she had learned her language from the land and felt her ancestors singing, which made it clear how sacred our language is. As long as we have the motivation to revive it, our language will live on. Wai'ihiput. One of my favorite words is Timhulach. 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 This word means earth. If you listen to the way I say the word, you can hear the earth spinning within the word. Timhulach. It's been wonderful sharing with you my first episode of Words and Culture. I'm Tracy Kim Bono. Until next time, Ninuis Acha Miku Kwakwalt.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Housing down King Sam.
Maltus.
Ninuis Ahaha Miku Kwakwal.
Kachu Nautano.
Wapamatin Mina.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Last May, rocks and earth from a landslide high in the Swiss Alps tumbled down onto the Birch Glacier. The weight put so much pressure on the Alpine Glacier that just over a week later, it collapsed, sending a massive wave of ice and rock crashing into the valley below and burying the town of Blatten. Fortunately, the town had already been evacuated, but one person died and the town is mostly gone.
It's really a devastating sight. The whole village, including the church and the houses that were sometimes over 500 years old, were all destroyed.
The causes of this disaster are complex. But Matthias Huss, a glaciologist at ETH Zurich, warns that global warming could make similar events more likely. When long frozen soil melts, it can destabilize mountain slopes and contribute to rock and landslides. Those events can then make glaciers more likely to collapse and wreak havoc on cities and towns below. Huss says the people of Blatten plan to rebuild in a safer area.
But still, it's very difficult for these people to lose all their belongings, all their life, and then restart again.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.